Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towns of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It says so right here. We are celebrating 27 years in this radio station on August the 3rd. We're going to kick it off where we're going to be doing a lot of eating next month. It's an eating tour. My 27 favorite things to eat. Costa's Inn right here in Timonium will be one of them. Actually, I'm going to be in Dundalk for that. We will have the Back to the Future scratch-offs this week, maybe next week, but by the time August gets around, we're going to have new ones from the Maryland Lottery. This guy did more Maryland Lottery shtick than anybody's ever stuck or shticked anywhere. I have never had him on my show because he worked another place. They were a little bigger than me. He was up a little earlier than I was back in the day. He is a Baltimore radio icon and legend. I was never good enough to be on QSR.
Oh, man.
I was never enough fun time oldies
that's
to be a part of it.
That is ridiculous.
I still have never been on 105.7, even though when I had 1570, people would write in the book that they listened to 105.7,
right.
And I get screwed on the Arbitron stuff anyways. It didn't matter. Steve Rouse is here off the chicken farm. Did you bring me any eggs or anything like that? No?
Actually, all the layers are gone now. You know, we've retired from the farm. Commercially, we still got stuff around, and sold the chickens, but now I just have a small little family flock. They're not laying yet. Soon as they
you
start
had a real
laying,
farm.
Yeah. Soon as they lay, Nestor, well, I'll come down give you a dozen, or we'll cook them up. Or
I don't
something.
Know anything about farming.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
Look what? At these hands. Do they look like they've been on a farm?
No.
They have never been on a farm.
I know.
My wife's laughing at home, and she's not even listening to us.
I was actually looking at my fingernails, making sure they're sort of clean, you know.
Well, you're in a crab. Well, they don't have crabs here. This is not a crab house. I should say that in Timonium. Go to Dundalk for the crabs. But where you been? What are you doing? You're doing
a
podcast.
Well,
like,
yeah, we just started the podcast. I'm not you know. I just wanted to see if it was something I was kind of
into. Do you miss doing this? How much of this have you done?
A little bit, I guess I do because, you know, I'm coming to talk with you. I've been on a couple other podcasts and started our own just to kind of see the feel. You know, that's not my thing that I'm finding out after a couple of podcasts. It's a whole different ball game, you know. I think of myself more like a boss jock kind of, you know, spinning the tunes, talking up the intros. Although we did a lot of interviews and that type of stuff on the show, but you know, when you're sitting here just yapping for like an hour or two, you know, that's a little different for me. I'm finding that it's like, okay, where are we gonna go now?
Like, someone that I respected said to me that I was the best interviewer that they had ever heard.
All right,
and I thought, I take phone calls from people about, like, that's what I did. Let's get after this. I mean, I don't know anything about your back. You weren't from around here originally, right? Is that right? I mean, you were a radio guy who landed here and made it big. I mean, this was your great success story.
Oh, it was, you know. And the thing about it was, I mean, I've been here since 85.
So okay, 40, I graduated in 85.
40
okay.
years.
All right, all right.
40 years. You graduated in 85. I'd been in the business about 15 years at that point.
Okay, but when you got here, B104 was kicking everybody's ass, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I literally put a Rick Springfield ticket up the other day.
I saw
from
it.
Their Toys for Tots.
I saw it, yeah.
You know, like, I went to that show. It was Baltimore's best B104 means music.
Yeah.
I still steal their ideas. The best idea ever was the little credit card that they gave me when I was a kid that I could get 50 cents off at Skateland. You know, it got me discounts. It was like a discount. It was like an entertainment book in a little red card. And you would come to places and there'd be a sticker up and say, the B104 card is accepted here, which basically meant like you got a free cup of soup or something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing about B104, and I'll just share a quick little story with you. When I came to Baltimore, I got a job at 92 Star, which was WIST-FM at the time. That was the first station I worked at here. Middays, eventually to the mornings at that station. I was there like 3 years. And when I got here, that was 85. So B104 was like everywhere. You could not go anywhere in town without a B104 clock or your credit things or, you know, guys out.
They marketed.
It was unbelievable.
They were at the East Point Mall every Saturday.
Yeah, they were everywhere.
These cards out there.
Yeah, they were everywhere. And I always thought if I ever got to do a morning show, that's how you win, by just being out, being everywhere in town.
Brian and O'Brien. Brian and O'Brien.
Yeah.
In the morning. On the morning.
Right.
On B104. See, you. Yeah. But I was a Grease Man guy.
Yeah.
So that was my, like, I listened to the Grease Man when you were just getting here, late 80s. And when I never wanted to be on radio, man. I wanted to be a sports writer. Oh, my God. All I ever wanted to be was John
Stedman. Well, that's how you started, right?
I wanted to be John Stedman. I never listened to sports radio. A little bit of Phil Wood, but I was not a – I was a sports savant, but not a guy that wanted to hear phone calls on BAL all night. Mm-hmm. I was, like, chasing girls, going to the beach. I was 18 years old.
It's
an old man's format, right?
Yeah.
And the Grease Man's gift to me was he could take any phone call – and make it funny, make it interesting, that he would just turn a phone call into improv shtick.
Isn't that kind of a sad story, though, when, I mean, he was so successful here and then decided, okay, well, you know, maybe we can go to L.A. and do my shtick out there.
Do the syndicated thing, and it didn't work.
And that was kind of it, I guess.
Mean, I want to talk to you about your thing, because I'm 35 years into doing this now.
Yeah.
27 years with the radio station in 2 weeks. Some days better than others. I still look at, like, what you did to dominate a market, what Lori DeYoung has done, Kirk's, you know, career at this point, Marty Bass, Denise Koch, these people. I mean, even Michael Olesker, every day I still read his work. So it's still relevancy. Went away, right? Like, you wanted to go on.
On May 5th, 2005, May 4th, 2005, the whole staff was fired at WQSR.
Did you see it coming?
No.
Not at all? No. You didn't see any
change? But it was interesting because, you know, I had the band, too, Stevie and the Satellites, that we played all over the place. The station brought a lot of people. We got a guy.
Eddie, we
water.
Don't put water
don't.
On
Come
the
on,
table.
Eddie.
We take it off the
Come
table.
On.
There we go.
What
Keep
do you
going.
Think?
Here we go. Harbaugh knocked water all over this computer one time. So anyway,
I forgot where I was going.
No, you got fired.
Oh, yeah. So we got fired that day. And that night, there was going to be a party, a client party, at downtown at the power plant. And we were playing. You know, it was for QSR clients.
They fired you on the day of the party?
And so...
Did the left side of the building talk to...
So the promotion director says, do you want to go on tonight first or second? And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, we're going to have another band too. And I said, how come? And he said, well, you know, just for a variety or whatever. And I was like, I thought that was weird, right? And so I said, yeah, I got it first. I don't know. And so I went back into our little office that we had there with the other guys from the morning show, and I said, that's kind of weird. What do you think? And my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, I called her, and I said, so that thing tonight, you know, this is what they're telling me. And she said, honey, I don't think you're going to be playing. And I was like, what? And the funny thing, Nestor, is the last song that we played when we went off the air at 10 o'clock was Hey, Hey, Nana, Hey, Hey, Kiss Him Goodbye, apparently. I don't remember that. Everybody else does. And then, you know, we went into a office with the management, and that was pretty much it. It was a shock. You know, we had no idea. It was a shock. It was you go through every emotion. I don't know if you've ever been through a situation like that, but
I fired everyone at my radio station on a Friday. My wife was on her deathbed, so okay. I'm keenly aware.
Yeah.
So, I did in the era of social media, so you could see the scars in my back, you know, if you wish. I feel from that perspective of I had to make a change. Financially, just quite frankly, it was the thing was not working anymore.
Killing you, yeah.
Yeah, it just wasn't working any longer. And my wife was in peril, but I did it under different circumstances. Did you want to go on the radio? I mean, you're Steve Rouse.
There was a couple of things that I was upset about. You know, we had such loyal listeners, a lot of loyal listeners, and I was kind of upset that we didn't have a last show just to say thanks, you know, for all of this. I mean, they made, really, it was them that made the show so great. And we had a great connection with the listeners. So we weren't able to do that. But I do have to say, I mean, you go through every emotion. You know, you're angry, you're upset, you're shy. I mean, every emotion. But I also had an emotion of sort of relief, believe it or not. Because once CBS, a few years before that, CBS bought all these radio stations in Baltimore, right? They bought Mix, Life, I think, Us, a couple of the AMs.
Infinity was that?
Yeah,
part of that, right?
Yeah. And once that happened, it was a lot different, you know, just from a management standpoint. It was a lot different. We had a big meeting when they took over at the Sheraton in Towson. And part of that meeting, they got up and said, you know, we want all our radio, our goal is to have all our radio stations earn a five share in the ratings for people watching and listening. You know, a five share is pretty good. It's pretty okay. You know, from a sales standpoint, so they could go out on the streets of Baltimore and say, all right, we've got a package deal. We're going to get you Mix, QSR, all these other stations.
What was it about black, white, young, old, west, north, east?
Well, I mean, all of that.
It was about covering all the bases.
Demos,
right?
You know.
Yeah,
right. All the
so
demos
if you were a car dealership, you could buy five demos and get $100,000 a year instead of getting, exactly.
Complete coverage, you know.
I ran it's such a different operation, man. Like, I mean, I've been in radio all these years, but I never was in radio. I was never in that game.
Yeah, yeah.
I was never in the ratings game, you know.
Right,
I was
right.
in the results game.
Yeah.
I was in the how many people are at the bar tonight at the barn.
Yeah.
These are my listeners.
Right.
Come see it.
Yeah.
Come feel it.
Yeah,
come touch
yeah, yeah.
it. And the internet's changed that, but you were in an era where, much like the Howard Stern movie, like, that book came out every 90 days, and you got trends. Remember
oh, my
trend?
God. Oh,
I mean,
geez, it was
–
That's
the part of your life I don't get. I get you the radio star guy, but I mean, now that I'm sitting with you and having first thing you're telling me about the day you got fired, I'm like, yeah, this is shitty business. I mean, like, really? I mean, like,
I'm
really.
Not going to say it's a shitty business. Well,
I do too. But from the people that ran it, I'm talking about.
Well,
from the corporate
structure,
what happened?
Let me just finish that story because they said we want everybody to have a five share. Well, I'm sitting there, and at that time, I don't remember what we had, but maybe like a 12 share.
I was going to say,
And so I'm going, wait a minute, what? Wait, no, and so that's basically what happened. We were doing great, so they sort of set us adrift and concentrated on the weaker points. And, you know, and it affected the show for sure. Because it's a pie. I mean, you can have a good show, but if you don't have any of the supporting members, it's going to be a lot tougher for you.
What made your show great? In your mind, when you look back and think the best shows you did, the best period of time, not your best book or whatever when you did an 18 or whatever, but just like when you got up and thought this is great and what made it great when it was great.
I think because we really cared about the listeners a lot. We did a lot with the listeners. We invited them in, you know, live. We took a lot of phone calls. There was a connection, and I think it depends on where you are. For some reason, for me, and I guess Baltimore, there was a connection. And I was actually thinking about that today, and I don't know if this has anything to do with it or not, but, you know, a lot of the listeners in Baltimore, you know, at that time were steel workers, watermen, construction guys, working at the port, kind of blue-collar sort of guys. And that's where I grew up. I grew up in up by the Canadian border in a little tiny town, but there were farmers,
where'd you grow
miners.
What's your town?
It's a little tiny town called...
I got Google. Hold on. I'm going to find it now. What language did you speak? I'm just kidding.
No, it was close to French.
Close to... what's the town?
Gouverneur. It's G-O-U...
Uh-huh.
V-E-R.
It's already a French word.
N-E-U-R, Gouverneur.
That's funny that I came up with that.
It rhymes with manure.
So. You're not far from Ottawa, let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
And not too far from Montreal.
Right, right.
Cornwall, Kingston. Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
So that's where I grew up. That's where I grew up. And that's where there was no radio stations until I was about 50, and then there was one radio station there, and that's where I started up there.
By the way, man, I went through your home area one time in my life. I went to see Pearl Jam up in Quebec City, and then came back through Montreal and Ottawa.
Yep.
And my flight home was out of Syracuse about four years ago.
Hancock Field.
When I did that drive, is it Gananoque, Mallorytown?
No,
Wellesley Island. Wellesley Island.
Yep.
That is one of the most beautiful places I have ever seen
in
my life.
Two summers on Wellesley Island because my grandfather had a cottage on
Can
Wellesley.
You tell people
and
how beautiful that is?
It's Gananoque, by the way.
Gananoque.
Gananoque. Yeah,
okay. It sounds like an Indian name on the Canadian
probably
side.
Is. Well, all that, Nestor, all that area of the Thousand Islands, which Wellesley Island is sort of in, is unbelievable. You know, in the summer, unbelievable. Winter, forget it.
I drove through Labor Day weekend, and it was I was blown away by how pretty it was, and I was just trying to cross the border and get my passport out, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is beautiful up here.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
And summers, you know,
you don't meet people from that part of the world often, right? I mean, you're 20 miles away from there, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
From what, Wellesley Island?
So you grow up in this
Podunk.
Upper North, right. Northern New York. What was your Wolfman Jack pathway to being Steve Rouse?
Well, I knew what I wanted to do since I was like 5 years old. I wanted to be an entertainer, you know, and so.
A radio entertainer?
Well, it became radio entertainer.
Who was your first hero? See, Ed Sullivan or something like that, or no?
Well, the Beatles. Beatles, right? Ed Sullivan, I mean, that was a huge deal.
You want to be one or the other.
Yeah. But really, if you look back, that Beatles appearance on Ed Sullivan was probably the start, because we had a band in high school because of the Beatles. You know, every guy after the Beatles were first seen were like, oh, man, we got to have a band, dude. Come on, you know. And so we started a band, and we stuck to it, you know. We had our first gig after a couple of years of practicing. None of us knew how to play an instrument. We didn't have an instrument.
You're in upstate New York, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there's
not a lot going on.
There's probably not even a record store or a guitar store.
We had to go to Watertown, New York to
have a music
record
store. Okay, all right.
And
to get a record or a guitar.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a drumstick.
Yeah,
exactly. Literally.
I know, that's true. So once the radio station got going, they had a little thing on Saturday mornings where they would invite local bands. And so they asked us if we would come and play.
In Watertown?
No, this was in Governor.
Okay.
After the station.
You had your own AM station there kind of thing? Okay.
And it became AM-FM.
Okay.
WIGS, the Wiggs Twins. Hey, okay. Everybody, it's the Wiggs Twins. You know.
Let's go. What were they playing at that time?
Everything.
Okay.
Everything. Like, my first job on WIGS was nighttime, and it was country.
70, 71, 72?
No, 68 probably.
I was born in 68. So yeah. 68 was your first radio gig.
I was in high school.
And you're playing late night country, so it's, you know.
It's, well, Dolly
you're
was young.
Hard.
Yeah,
a little Patsy, Patsy Cline.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Farron Young. Buck Owens was huge.
Okay.
You know.
Late 60s, kind of okay.
Era. Yeah. But from that appearance on the station with our band, I had a little studio, make-believe studio in my bedroom before this.
You broadcast into your right? Okay,
and I listened to Cousin Brucey, WABC New York. Jackson Armstrong was huge. Wolfman Jack was a hero. You know, all these guys. And so, but, you know, you think, well, that's great. It's a great dream, but I'll never get out of here. I mean, you know, there's no culture here whatsoever.
We got to get out of this.
The animals.
Yeah, there we go.
So anyway, we got done that gig on the radio, and taking equipment back to the car, our drummer's mom said, we had decided I was going to be one who introduced our songs and did the talking. And his mother said, Steve, you sounded really good introducing the songs, and that was all I needed. You know, that was it.
Encouragement.
So, yeah.
Did you get a tape recorder and, like, work that way?
Yeah,
that?
I had everything.
I never wanted to be in radio, dude. That's the craziest thing. Like, I...
I definitely envisioned myself being television.
I envisioned myself being maybe John Buren
or Chris Thomas.
Chris Thomas. But no, well, the radio thing just happened because Kenny Albert came to me and said, Nestor, I'm doing a New York style sports radio show. Do you want to? You know a lot about sports. Come, I don't know enough Baltimore.
You guys did the skipjacks, right?
That's correct. Yeah. And that sort of began the whole.
Yeah, maybe this is okay, right?
Well, it speaks maybe to your radio side of the corporate thing, where the first time I went on the radio, I had a great boss. Jack Gibbons is responsible for me, and I tell him I love him every time I see him. But keep inviting him out to the show. He should come out here and do a show with me. But Jack was, I worked at the paper, and I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't belong there, but I worked hard enough to make myself belong there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I didn't have a degree. I looked 12. I was the young kid in the corner that would do anything they asked me to do.
Yeah.
And I could write. And then once I wrote, the more I wrote, the more encouragement they gave me.
But isn't it, I mean, when you think back on that, and I do the same thing for me, I was the guy who just loved it so much, I was there all the time.
I didn't need to be paid, right?
Right,
I was sitting in the sports department taking phone calls and being with sports people.
This life has never been about money, you know, really, because I just love to do it. I would have done it for... Well, I did do it for practically nothing for a long time.
Well, right. Until you made so give me that pathway out of New York to like where you got a gig and you went on the radio train, which is what it was for every I mean, everybody I'm mentioning, all the Greasemans and all that, Greaseman was doing Jacksonville. I mean, everybody was trying to get a gig at the bigger city.
Yeah.
Much like from a newspaper standpoint, if you worked at the Dundalk Eagle, you were trying to get to the Towson Times, to get to the Columbia Flyer, to maybe one day the Sun would bring you on.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the way it worked.
There was a stepladder about all of that. And in the radio business or the newspaper or the media business, you know, Marty Bass is in Paducah, Kentucky. Mark Viviano told me stories about being in a Watertown, Iowa. Like, you know, that was the pathway that industry.
I'm sure you
landed middays at 92 Star, you were in Buffalo or something. Where were you?
Well, I was in places a lot smaller than Buffalo, believe me. I mean, Baltimore was my first big market. I mean, I worked probably 15 years, you know, Elmira, New York. I was in the Finger Lakes of New York State for a long time. I mean, I stayed in Governor for about 4 or 5 years because eventually, you know, I got to be the program director and the music director. Not that that was like wow, because it was the only station in town. But
you're
still
24, but it's a big thing, right?
Yeah, but the good thing about it was starting at a station like that, you do everything. You know, you do sports. I did play-by-play for
Balker
high school.
Racing those 8-tracks.
Right.
Remember that?
You know, you do engineering. You're on the air. You do news. You do, you know, so you get a real great foundation to take off from. But, you know, I was in Charlottesville, Virginia for a while. I was in Elmira, Finger Lakes. And before Baltimore, I was in Bangor, Maine. So, and in Bangor is where I had my, what I always call my come to Jesus meeting, where here I was like 33 years old up there, and, you know.
You're a transient radio guy.
Yeah,
right,
living paycheck to paycheck. I have no money. I can barely make it. I have a girlfriend who actually is bringing home roadkill, so we have dinner, you know. It's a true story. And or we're going down on the rocks on the water to cut shellfish off the mussels off from the stone rocks to have for dinner. I mean, by the time I got to Baltimore, I don't think I had a muscle for like 17 years.
Get crabs here instead.
Yeah, thank God.
I'm glad to ask you all this because, I mean, you're a legend in Baltimore radio. I don't think anybody knows that you starved in Bangor, Maine.
Oh,
you know
my God.
I mean?
Like, so I had my come to Jesus meeting with myself. I literally went out into the woods and sat down and went through a very emotional thing where I'm yelling, I'm crying, I'm laughing, I'm apologizing to people that I felt I didn't do right by over the course of these 15 years, and what am I going to do, you know? I can't continue like this, so what are my alternatives? So I'm thinking of different alternatives and stuff, but I loved to be on the air and loved to be in radio. So out of that come to Jesus meeting came, I got to get to a bigger place where I can make some money, you know? And so I worked on an air check, you know, back then. That's how you got a job. You had your resume and made a tape of your best bits or talk-ups or whatever it was that you did.
I had clips in the newspaper business, my best stories.
There you go.
Put them in an envelope, put a resume together.
Same deal.
And followed up with a phone call, polite.
Yeah.
Talked to HR if they had a thing, right?
You know, the whole deal. And so I sent out to Baltimore, Charlotte, and Milwaukee.
Why those three?
I think
was there an industry sheet that had a...
Well, you know, back then you had different publications that would have
in the newspaper business, it was called Editor and Publisher was the name of the book. It came every month. It had all the job postings in the back. I was a junkie. All I ever wanted to do was work somewhere else. Like, I sent out... I got written up at the Sun for writing too many resumes out on the Xerox machine. Because I was 19.
And, of course, one night you left one out
there,
right?
I got offered two jobs. Anchorage, Alaska offered me a chance to come up and cover the Anchorage hockey team.
Okay.
University of Alaska Anchorage.
That would have been cool.
And I had a chance to cover the Packers at the Appleton State Journal in Appleton, Wisconsin.
All right.
It was a pay cut.
Oh,
and I had to
go
to live in Wisconsin.
Did you do it?
No, hell no. I'm still here. But, I wonder what would happen to
my life.
Calm down,
man.
I almost took a gig with the Memphis Commercial Appeal as their pop music critic.
Okay.
So, I mean, I went down the road of trying to get to be a transient newspaper guy.
Right.
That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to get the Dolphins beat in West Palm Beach. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I wanted to do when I was
focused on, right?
Like, and you're 33 and you're screaming like you're on an ayahuasca trip in the middle of the woods.
Right, yeah.
And so Baltimore calls and, like, Who's the boss at 92.3 at that time?
92 Star. Was Gary Mercer. They were owned by UBC, United Broadcasting Company.
And they're playing like Barry Manilow then, right? They're like that?
Yeah, yeah. Lionel Richie. Yeah. And really, you read cards. There was no personality. When I got to the about halfway through my 3-year stand
explain
there.
Explain read cards because I've never read a card.
Well, it'd be like your scratch-off here. You know, you'd have a pile of cards already. Yeah, already.
There was a writer.
It'd be like Lionel Richie, Barry Manilow, and the Beach Boys all coming up next on 92 Star. That was it, man.
So I got to interject because, like, when I'm with a radio dude, Steve Rouse is here. We're at Costas. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Well, I got to get to that with you in the second segment, Buddy Rugow and all that stuff, too. But I was doing radio. I started radio on December 13, 1991, got my own show in 92. So this is 1999. I've been on the air in 7 years. Seven years. I had filled in at 101 Sports to get a nationally syndicated gig out this was my corporate radio experience, right? I went out to Northbrook, Illinois, one-on-one sports flash. So I went out and I did fill-in gigs, and I had my own radio station, and I had my own gear, and I had my own ISDN line, and they liked me. And all of a sudden, when anybody would get sick or it would be Christmas Day, they'd say, you want to fill a shift? We'll pay you $500, fill a shift. I said yes always.
Yep.
They finally hire me. I did sports radio for 4.5 months, and they said, they brought me into the office out in Chicago, like, hey, we're launching a new show. It's going to be called NFL Monster Monday, and it's going to be up in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, NFL Films. You're going to do this with Steve Sable, Brian Baldinger, Ron Jaworski, Merrill Hodge. They're going to be so you're going to have to get your car and drive up to New Jersey every Monday.
From where?
From Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
And do the show, and I'm like, this is great. Now, we're going to have you go up and meet Brian Baldinger, and a man named George Krieger came from television. George Krieger, you can Google him. He's the guy who hired Terry Bradshaw, what you know is the Fox NFL team.
Okay,
he hired Kenny Albert.
All
he hired Joe Buck.
Yep.
He hired all of the Fox team, that half of them still here. George got canned at Fox after, 5 years, and went to run one-on-one sports. So here's this television executive that comes in. I know George a little bit. George liked me. I like George. We go upstairs at Sporting News, or not Sporting News, at NFL Films, and we're about to do our first show. First week, and George is sitting where Eddie's sitting over there, and he's writing cards out. He's writing out note cards.
Yeah.
I've been on the air 10 years. I've been doing a show every day for months for this network.
Mm-hmm.
And I get there, and he started writing me what you know to be normal.
Right.
I ain't never seen nothing. I interned for Scott Garceau and Mary Beth. I worked at television. I never seen anybody write note cards to tell Mr. Reporter guy, anchor guy, what to say on the air. I swear to you, he labored for an hour. Yeah. Writing me an open, right?
Yeah,
I did. I probably had 10,000 hours of radio.
What do you think of that?
He's my boss. So I'm sitting there. Baldinger thinks this is normal because he worked for him in television, and Krieger hands me this thing, and now I'm starting to sweat a little bit. Like,
what's happening?
I got to read this.
What's happening?
And he's practicing with me, like it was like
really?
It was like pig vomit.
Wow,
it was totally like pig vomit.
Yeah.
WNBC.
Right.
So he hands it to me, and I'm like, hello, friends. I'm Nasty Nestor Aparicio, and this is Brian Baldinger, my NFL legendary partner, and we today will begin a series of new...
Wow.
And I'm playing the Nasty theme song, and...
Doesn't sound like Nasty to me.
And I'm like, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. I got burned up. I mean, I'm 30 years old, so I'm a different guy than I am today,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
Now I'd laugh at the old man and say, give it to me. I'll read it just the way you want.
Right.
Eddie.
Right.
You know, I would do it that way, but to be funny, but
yeah.
I remember that,
yeah.
And I remember making me itch a little bit, and, like, there was no creativity.
No.
And that's
but
what you thrived in creativity,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, well... And I was doing mornings in Bangor, so, but let me just point this out, a couple of things. One thing that you hit on, I'm going to say this before I forget it, you were willing to do anything at that point. And when I came to 92 Star, they did a lot of promotions, and it was a pretty good station, really. And I did, nobody else on the staff, and this is the way it was at a lot of stations, the on-air talent hated to go out and meet the public. They just didn't want to.
They were introverts.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
So many of them are that you wouldn't realize are. But I was willing, man, to do. I don't think in 3 years I was there, I don't think I ever had just a regular base paycheck because I did stuff.
You did reads, constantly. Live reads.
Well,
yeah.
All that, but just outside appearances a lot. They did a lot of promotional stuff outside.
It would mean the world to me if you worked for me and you wanted to meet our clients.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you wanted to be in costumes.
Yeah, and I did them all.
Wanted to sit at the bar for one, but not seven.
Yeah.
If you worked for me. You know what I mean?
I did do seven.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. I mean, we all did. But, you know.
But the other thing was, when I came from Bangor, I mean, I was a little afraid. You know, this was a big city. I had never worked in a big city. I was intimidated a little bit. As a matter of fact, the first night I got here, I stayed at, I think it's in the Econo Lodge now. Actually out here in York Road next to Chick-fil-A, whatever that little motel is there. And I went in the office to pay for the room. It was my girlfriend and I at that time, the roadkill queen. And there was a Sunday Sun because it was on the weekend. And the Sunday Sun magazine was inside the Sunday Sun in those days. And on the cover of that Sunday Sun, do you know Tony Hill?
Sure.
All right. Was Tony Hill, who was the overnight guy in 92 Star, and it was a whole story in 92 Star. The front picture was Tony Hill in the middle of the night with a shot of him, but behind him were the penthouse windows overlooking the city. And I looked at that, and I went, holy shit.
Oh, this is big job.
That's where I'm going to be.
Right.
But I was... Yeah, it was exciting, but it also was.
I flew to Northbrook, Illinois to do my first fill-in at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and I saw that clock and I saw the light, it was like I'd never done radio in my life. And I've been on it every day for 7 years at that point.
Right.
But when you're like 1-800-877-9, you know.
What's
like,
the number again?
I mean, I'm like. And it was a cockpit. When I went in there, I mean, I worked at little WITH with Rockin' Robin and Alan Field and those guys in 1992. Yep. And I learned all of those radio skills of bulk erasing, cutting like I did all of that in 1992.
Yeah, you edited back in those days, it was not little
and
working
I'll,
the mouse around.
And I'll say this, Kenny Albert was also like the son of a legendary broadcaster. But Kenny's a grunt to this day. Kenny's
really?
A grunt. You
really?
Know, Kenny... is a hands-on. Kenny's a worker. I mean, obviously, right?
Yeah,
I mean, but like having that in you, no matter whether you're making $1 million a year, whether you're starving and banger,
right?
That want.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah.
So you get here, you're at 92, you're doing the middays. Where is the legend of Good Time Oldies and 105.7 and you stepping into that cockpit with that ensemble that?
Well,
won awards and made a lot of money, and we still remember a generation later.
Yeah. Sean Casey was the morning guy at 92 Star. You know Sean?
He's at CBM now,
right.
Yes.
He got that. That's how long he's been at CBM. He got that job, and so they moved me into mornings. And so you could do a little bit more in the morning. Wendy Corey was my partner, was the news lady then. And so that was pretty good. But that went on for about a year and a half, and it was just like, I'm kind of done with this. But you looked around the skyline of Baltimore and the different morning shows, like, where can I go? I mean, you've got all these big shows. There were a lot of big shows at that point in time, at Mix, at 98 Rock, B104,
Well, I listened to the Grease Man, and he was a DC station.
He was in DC, right.
So, I mean, you were competing with DC,
yeah,
too.
DC,
in
right,
a big
of course.
Way.
So you had all these, and so I'm sitting there going, I really want to stay in Baltimore. I loved Baltimore. I loved this city. I mean, 6 months in, I was telling
you. You came in 85, right? Yeah. So the Colts had just left. The Blast are a big thing.
Yep.
Orioles are on fire, right?
Yep,
all right.
Yep. And
Harbor's coming to life, right? Like,
oh,
literally.
Yeah.
Power plant.
Power
all
plant
of that.
Was huge.
Fish market.
The whole thing,
okay.
Man.
Hammerjacks coming on.
Yeah. And I just felt like I fit. You know, this was my town. There was a connection almost immediately. And after the first 6 months, I really felt, because I was out, I was all over the place and everything, I really felt that I knew the town just as well, if not better, than most of the residents, because I was everywhere and I was learning and I was meeting people like crazy.
That's all you ever wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
That was your dream,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. So anyway, I'm sitting at 92 Star and I'm like, I wouldn't even know where to apply, because all these are pretty entrenched morning shows and stuff. And then out of the blue, a guy by the name of Buzz Hyken, who was a sales manager at 92 Star, had gone to QSR, and he said, you want to have lunch? And I said, sure. And he said, I'm going to invite a couple people. Carl Brenner, who owns WQSR, I think he was the last individual owner, you know, other than you, I guess, that owned a station before it was a corporate deal. And so I'm thinking, what the hell? You know, because they had a show called Lou and Linda. It was Linda Sherman and Lou Krieger. And they did pretty well.
They were oldies even then, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, we had the lunch, and there was some interest in talking to me about coming over. And I was like, wow, okay, so that's pretty cool. I can't remember exactly how that ended. I think I had another meeting with Steve Cochran, the rock and roll doctor.
Man, I love Steve now. Steve loved me.
Yeah, and guy, he was a great guy.
He hired me to DJ down at Bohager's again. Late, great Steve Cochran.
Yeah,
good man.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, one thing led to another. We worked out a deal, and all of a sudden, from where I didn't think there was anywhere to go, there was somewhere to go, and that was in September of '88, where I started at QSR.
So you did 17 years.
17 years, yep, exactly.
Well, I asked you what made it great, and you said the callers, the people, your connection with people. I think the music, the joy in the music.
Mm-hmm,
I think
fun.
I when I see your face, I think
yeah.
the turtles singing Happy Together.
Yeah,
or I
cool.
think I Love You More Today Than Yesterday.
Yeah,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Spiral Stair, one of the great songs
and
ever.
And talking
right?
up the intros was huge.
I would just say, I want to ask you this, and then we'll break, because I want to
okay,
come back.
Right.
We'll talk about more crap when we come back.
All
but
right.
when I went on the air in 1991-92, I had a guy named Jim Ward who was a he and Paul Kopelke had done radio, and they were trying to instill something different. And Jim Ward said, you call yourself Nasty Nestor on the radio, you better damn well be nasty. That was what he said to me.
Right,
he's a Philadelphia guy, you
yeah.
know. I would say when I went on the air, because you asked me 30 minutes, and you were interviewing me about like getting on the air and taking phone calls and all of that. I'm doing live mic. I had no songs to spin. You
right,
know,
yeah, yeah.
It was just.
And that's why you're so good at this, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
you
it know? Was just carrying it on, reading the paper, reading highlights, making funny observations. At the end of every shift, I'd write down everything I said that was funny, that made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down everything I said that I thought was compelling or interesting or, you know, or what Rudy Martsky might pull out and want to put in the paper, or what Ray Frazier or Milton Kent would hate me for,
right? Yeah, yeah.
At the time, you're trying to get publicity, right,
yeah,
in
yeah.
that way. And after listening to the Grease Man for all those years and what Stern was trying to do and was doing and getting fined by the FCC and all of that, there was such nervousness about how far to take a dick joke or how far to
yeah,
take
yeah.
anything that had to do with sex,
yeah.
drugs,
yeah.
politics to some degree.
Yeah.
Violence even then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, Greaseman famously got fired over a racial joke, you
yep.
know, like where
yep.
what Andrew Dice Clay could get away with
mm-hmm.
and what he could get away with on your show.
Mm-hmm.
And the seven dirty words, we all know the Carlin, those are the things we couldn't do.
Right.
But man, the envelope was getting pushed in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how often somebody who's trying to be, I mean, you said, one of the first things you said to me here was something we made at Justin Tucker, sort of a funny off the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you're a funny MF-er, but I don't know how that would have played on QSR in 1988
yeah.
versus 1998
yeah.
versus the day you got fired.
Yeah.
Because the eras of what
yeah, and
you
it,
could or couldn't wear that
increased.
Edge
yeah.
is, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, a morning show guy of your stature with your ratings, Nasty Nestor got away and pissed off people in various ways, but I had rules too, right?
Yeah.
And just a general, not just the fact that I had integrity. My mother was listening every day.
Right.
And I had never lied. To this day, I've never conjured anything, thought what's going to get ratings or what's going to. People think I stir things up, and I'm like, that's the dumbest. You said that about me. You've never met me.
Yeah.
I've never conspired in that way.
Yeah.
But I never had to build a show either.
Mm-hmm.
I never sat around and had to do shtick, come up with bits, things
mm-hmm.
that you were demanded to do, right? Mm-hmm. And then where the edge of that line is, of where the punchline is, where, man, you had some older women, you had religious people, you had all...
Well, it's interesting you bring that up.
You don't want to get those... You don't want the boss getting angry.
No.
You know?
And a few times he did, you know.
Of course.
But my rule was always, and it seemed to work, was you go up to the line and you leave it sort of open.
But where's the line?
Well, but you go up to this line that you feel is safe, but close.
Your line.
Yeah, but close. And you let the listener fill in the end. Fill in the end. Let them
write their own punchline.
Just go with it, yeah. Yeah, that's basically what we did a lot, I think. Yeah.
Well, I made a massage reference when he got here. And I'll set you up if you want to use your line.
I don't remember what
it was.
I'm
funny.
Old. I don't remember what I said.
It was funny. I had a special massage technique done to me, and you found that to be rather humorous in the air of Justin Tucker in some way.
Yeah,
you know?
Whatever it was.
But obviously what he did is not humorous at all. But
no.
But there's the point, right?
Yeah,
somebody's going to say, how dare you, my wife's a massage. My wife was abused by Justin. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where...
What exactly happened.
Yeah,
right?
Where the line is. Yeah. Now, I own my FCC license. I am my own boss. I fired myself several times. It didn't work out at all. But that in the modern era... Curio Wellness is my client now. If you made a "I was getting high last night" joke, but you could play, you would have been fired. If you were said on the air, I got high last night at a concert. Yep. But Paul Simon could go behind and smoke himself a J in a song that you would play next to me and Julio in the school year.
Right,
like,
right.
So
you just have to.
I was always worried for guys like you that you were
going
to go
you've
over the
done
line,
it,
you know?
It really helps when you've done it for a few years because you know your audience. You know, you can't. And we
but
were.
But even if you slip up, man,
yeah,
you know,
well,
you just say
you
something
do,
silly. You,
do,
you know.
I mean, I swore.
It's live radio.
I swore a couple times on the air. Just
did you?
Yeah. Totally accident, you know. And
did you 7-second it or?
We. I hate to say this, but we didn't have any delay. No delay on that show.
Wow. If you weren't managed by me. Nasty, you didn't have my callers.
Nasty's going. Nestor's going. Oh, I wish I'd known that. I would have called in a few times.
Dude, I'll say this to make you laugh because you're a real radio dude. You know, JR has been my executive producer since 1998. Did you know Dwight Weller? Did you ever get to know Dwight?
No.
Dwight passed away. Dwight was my first engineer, so God bless Dwight Weller. Lost him a long, long time ago. I mean, I broadcast from his mother's shed over here behind the ROFO off Timonium Road, right on the other side of here.
Wow.
We broadcast a whole summer in his mother's shed, summer 93, when we were building the studio.
Wow.
And people come out and mow the lawn. And we'd have to shut the shed. I'd shut the shed on the air. No, it didn't have one of those.
Okay.
You pulled the damn thing. You know?
Right.
I mean, I'm telling you, six blocks from here, we'd do that. So JR, you know, built this whole thing, and the 7-second delay had the big red button. It had a red button on it. And there were people so obsessed with making jokes about my mother or telling me to go fornicate myself at various points. Mm-hmm. That when the 7-second delay would dump, it would take a couple of minutes to build in.
Catch back up, right?
So we had, at various points, we had a 1-2 punch where somebody would call in and say, I'm going to drop an F-bomb. You're going to be the next caller. You drop another one, too. Ray Bachman, you're a saint. You're a saint for catching.
So the second one would get on.
The second would get on. Of course it would get on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I was filling in at 98 Rock, obviously they actually blipped me out a couple of times where I was thinking, I thought this was, I probably would have said this on my show. So I don't, you know, who knows?
Well, that's why I ask you about it, because there really is an invisible line.
Yeah.
And for guys like you in that seat of being the number one morning show guy, it was incumbent that you be funny. People hated you and loved you because that's the nature of the thing. And one F up. And, you know, they were going to try to come and get you.
Yeah.
You know,
well, most of the time, we got in trouble for pranks. You know?
That's what I mean, you know?
Like, we would pull some stuff off, like on our boss. A couple times, he was a big traveler. Bill Pasha is his name.
The wake-up calls? Did you do
No,
you didn't do that?
Everybody says, hey, we loved your wake-up calls. That wasn't us. We never – or the birthday wake-up call. That wasn't us. But we call, like
That's
Bill.
That's so funny.
Bill, he'd travel. He was in London once, and so we – and he would never tell us where he was staying because he
knew.
Didn't trust us, you know. Well, but we would find out always somehow, and he never knew how, but we did. Like one time we ordered, called as him and said, you know, we're having a celebration in our room, And, we would like
your
most expensive bottle of champagne that you have. You know, it would be a in-house bar.
Send some orange juice, too, mimosa, fresh squeezed.
And you can just put it on my bill. And so when he got back, he didn't even look at his bill, but he thought, geez, that was pretty expensive, I guess. And so when we told him, how is the champagne? He was like, what? And the next day he came in, he goes, that bottle of champagne cost more than my room for the week.
But you did this on the air.
Yeah.
So it's work-related.
Well, and
you'll
love this one. Another time he was, I think,
it's
in Montreal.
It's across the comedy. It's not cheap getting comedy.
He was in Montreal. And so we called up and said, I've got this crazy, I get this crazy allergic reaction to towels, linen. I don't know. It might be what they're washing. I don't know what it is. But I would like you to take all the towels out of my room. And if you could replace it with paper, like paper towels, that would be great. And so he and his wife would come back, and he'd have not a towel in the bathroom, but paper towels, to take a shower with and stuff.
I would not want to have been your boss.
There was another classic one was when we put posters of his picture and saying he we're looking for this man for public nudity. That was a bad one. Our producer.
He didn't like that one.
No, our producer, Mike.
Maynard? Not Maynard?
Well, Maynard and Mike. Mike.
Maynard.
Yeah, yeah. So they got in a little trouble about that. I was like, I didn't even know about it. No.
I only had one wacky wake-up call. Mickey Coachella, when he was doing 98 Rock, early on. I'm laying in bed, and this is before I was married. I had a Swedish girlfriend. She was down for the week. I'm laying in bed at 6:28 in the morning, and my phone goes off. And it might have been one of the brick phones back in the late 90s, mm-hmm. a cellular one
or
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. The shoe phone. We call it a shoe phone.
And I answered it, and, hey, it's Mickey. You're on the air. I'm like, oh, God, Mickey, you got me. What? And I'm like, what stupid things he going to do? And I just kept waiting for him to
do something.
Do the punchline.
Right. Never came.
No, he had a music question or something. He's trying to get me to settle a bet or something.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I was a little disappointed he didn't break my balls worse than he did because I thought this was part of the shtick. And I'm like, that's all you wanted? I'm going to go back to bed now.
It was interesting.
That's it.
Yeah, it was interesting when I would fill in at 98 Rock. Like if Josh was out, I would do the news. If Amelia was out, I would sit in for her or sit in for Mickey. But, they would often have porn actresses on the air.
Sure.
And
that's what I mean. Where are the edges? I don't know where the edges, right?
Well, at one point, I'm sitting there and a girl's sitting right next to me. And I said in between, during a break, I said, yeah, I got to get some water. And the girl had a bottle of water right in front of her. She goes, well, you can have some of mine. And I was like, how do you answer this question, right?
I might have a call. I'm coming down with something. I can't.
And she called me out on it. She goes, you don't want to drink out of my bottle? And I was like, what do you say? No, I don't.
Give me that damn thing.
stuff like that was always.
Steve Rouse is here. He did morning radio. He's still funnier than I am. You made me, I'm crying a little bit.
Yeah.
Mickey, I did his podcast a couple weeks ago. You did Mickey, didn't
you?
Yeah,
yeah.
I did Mickey's podcast. And Mickey thinks I'm funny. And he's always encouraging me to do stand-up, right?
Right.
And so we're working on that. We've been working on it for 25 years.
And he's got a great theater there. Did he show you the theater?
Yeah.
I saw
the Hammerjacks movie in that theater when they screened it over there. But I said to Mickey, like, within 15 minutes, I'm going to be in here crying. And within 15 minutes, I've got my glasses off, tears are, like,
right,
because
right.
Mickey makes me laugh.
Yeah.
He just, like, our friendship makes me laugh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I had fun being with him, but, like, I knew you would make me laugh.
Well,
so thanks for coming out.
It's been a long time,
All right, let's break.
A little rusty at making
you laugh.
Let's
get a crab cake. You eat crab cake still? I want to ask about your farm and all that stuff. I want to ask, like, where you've been the last 20 years.
I want to ask you a couple questions,
and I want to talk lottery with you and Buddy Rugo and all your lottery stuff.
Because
I told John Martin that I was having you out today, and John's from Ohio, got here 15 years ago. Not all that familiar with you, but very familiar with Buddy Rugo, right? And I said to him, you and Buddy were like, it was shtick, and it was a big part of that. So, and I feel like whenever I do my shtick, especially with John, sort of channeling Buddy a little bit in the first ever $1 million winner that I'm sure you were a part of on the radio with him.
Yeah.
Your wacky Saturday Night Live show you did too.
That's right. How do you remember that thing?
I remember.
That only lasted
remember,
like 3 shows.
Because I was a kid here. I idolized morning show hosts who had 12 ratings. You know that, right? Steve Rouse is here. He's wearing his Baltimore appropriately a City Connect.
Thank you.
You know they lose a lot in that, right?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
We're here at Costas. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Curio Wellness. You know what they do, right? Stuff you couldn't talk about 30 years ago. But
okay.
They do wellness, and they do this Move product I have. It's great for my neck and my back, so I'm very appreciative. And they're based right here in Timonium. You can see Timonium Pikesville up in Elkton as well. They are sponsoring our 27th anniversary. This guy made it 20 years at Baltimore Radio. How many years did you make it? 20?
Well, 17 on the Rouse the Company
about 20
show.
Years you were yeah. here, and then yep. 15 before that that we yep. learned about.
Yep.
In romantic places like Bangor and Elmira.
Oh, it was great, man.
My dad was born in Elmira, so another one.
What? Was he really?
Yeah, absolutely. 1919. Right,
Earl Weaver.
Yeah. Earl Weaver, Elmira. Absolutely. Yeah. A good book, too. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to do more of This Is Your Life with Steve Rouse. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive. Crab cakes coming next.